And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 862. And it's a special one today. We have a first timer on the show, which it's been a while since I got to say first timer on the show. I had him on a little bit of a Bubba in the Bloom show from Las Vegas a little bit ago. I'll make sure to pronounce his name properly on this one. I even typed it properly if you're looking at things on the YouTube. But this gentleman, he won the 2025 main event overall championship over at the NFBC. He's had another stellar year in 2026. And just an all-around good guy. You can find him on Twitter at Tulsa Hop. I don't know if he wants that out there because he's got a low profile, but it's great. Todd Hoppy, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Yeah, I think the Vegas podcast absolutely counts. That one should be, yes. I mean, that awesome. That should be nominated for SWA Award. That thing was, that was a great podcast. I love that.
We loved having you. It was one of those, like, every year we go into it and it's like, okay, who do we want to bother? But then it's like, we just kind of hang out and everyone's grabbing a beer or something. It's like, hey, come over here. Give me 5 minutes of your time. And you know, you never know where it goes. And it's just cool with all the boards up and about and chatting with you and everything. So it's always one of the highlights of our trip. That's for sure. How's we'll get into some strategy talk for like overall stuff, but let's kick it off nice and easy. So far, we'll talk 2026 for a minute. I don't know if that's easy technically, but how many teams did you roll with this year? Because I know I obviously watched you draft one live in Vegas.
Yeah, I did. I did three main events and three OCs, and then about 20 of the draft champions. And you know, I mean, it's going pretty well. I feel like I got one main that's in the top 20. I got one of the OCs that's in the top 150. I got a DC that's in the top 100. So, I mean, I feel pretty good about that. Like that's the goal. Not every team is good. Some of them are pretty bad, but you know, I mean, the goal when I play that many leagues is get a couple contenders, right? Get a couple tickets punched that are at least in the hunt halfway through the season. And we're there now. So, you know, that is the goal. So I'm feeling pretty good. You know, it's not, nothing was ever going to be the same as it was last year when it was this time of year I was in first place, you know, and riding high. It was never going to be like that again. So I'm enjoying it, you know, having a good year, having a fun year. And, you know, there's still a long time to go. There's a lot that can change. But, you know, I'm trying to push my way to the top again.
Yeah, no, and you're doing just fine. As you mentioned, you got some contenders in there. You got, like you say, punch that ticket to the dance, as they say in March Madness, and you're doing that just out of curiosity, because obviously it's too late to care, like from a drafting standpoint. But you said you did 20 DCs. How do you utilize DCs to get ready for the Fab season? Because I know some people say it's learning the player pool, this and that, but you did 20 of them, so I have a hunch that means there's maybe a little more going on there, or maybe you just love to draft like we all do.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it, is like, this is for fun. And one of the most fun things you can do playing fantasy baseball is draft. So drafting a bunch of teams is a blast. I mean, another piece of it is like, it gives you a chance doing those leagues to get guys that maybe you wouldn't get in your big leagues, you know? So I've got a couple of DCs. I did not get the Miz on any of my big teams, but I've got a couple of DCs where I've got him, right? And so when I look at the box score of a Brewers game at the end of the night and see 15 strikeouts and 9 shutout, I can at least look at a couple of my teams and be like, oh yeah, like that one surged. Right. So, yep. I mean, that's part of it too, is like, I don't know. It's fun to have guys like that on your team. And even if they're not on one of my big teams drafting that many DCs, like I'm going to have a couple of those guys. So that's a piece of it as well.
No, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. Get some more fun pieces is the way it looks like. That was a topic in the Discord the other day, is so many of us in there have zero Miz shares. And that is a crying shame, looking back at things now in hindsight, of course. It didn't pan out quite as well as we would have liked here. Just some kind of general 2026 questions for you as you're moving and shaking through your leagues. How have you handled the save situation going forward? Like, and then I guess we'll start with, how did you handle it in draft season?
Yeah, I mean, I would so far give myself like a C- grade. Like it's not been great. You know, in draft season, I really did want to try to figure out one of those guys in the in 15 teamers in like the 4th, 5th, 6th round that I felt really good about that had the chance to be in the same tier as the upper tier closers, right? So I really didn't want to spend a second or third round pick, but wanted to have one of those guys that could get you the strikeouts and the ratios and the saves. You know, I mean, the problem is that a lot of times I landed on Jeff Hoffman for that. Right. And, you know, we don't play in swinging strike leagues. So I don't get credit for that. So, you know, luckily, on a lot of those teams, I was able to grab Louis Varland, you know, a couple of weeks ahead of time, just cause you could sort of see the writing on the wall with Hoffman. But you know, that did not work out super well. Then second closer, I really like to dive in, like, you know, the 10th, 11th round, somewhere around there, to get the second guy. And a lot of times, you know, that's pretty murky waters. That, you know, that's the one that's actually, I think, probably gonna, it's gonna grind my gears the most out of all of the picks that I made, because I feel like I ended up with a lot of Brian Abreu, and I feel like the Brian Abreu thing was right in so many ways, in terms of it took Hader 2 months to get back, yeah, and they wanted him to be the guy and they gave him so many shots, and you know, he just absolutely pooped the bed. And that was, you know, that's frustrating in so many other ways, because it's like, you nailed the right guy. He got the opportunity and he was just terrible. So, you know, I got to think about, you know, what that means for next year. And, you know, we'll see. Like, it's just been an absolute minefield for closers. You know, I think it's going to turn out that the right answer this year really was like pay up for Mason Miller or Cade Smith. That may not be true next year, but, you know, I got to think about what the different, you know, what the different approaches are and what my strategy will be next year. But so far for this year, it's like just barely trying to hang on.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like, listening to you talk about Abreu, it is frustrating. Like, I just avoided Houston because I couldn't get an answer. But to your point, like, if you're doing the research and you have your strategy in play, you made the right call in theory, thinking, okay, Abreu, if he pitches the way Abreu pitches, 2 months is awesome. Like, especially this landscape of closing that we've had, you on paper, that gets you what, 10 to 12 saves, hopefully, like, mm-hmm, over the 2 to 3 months or whatever. Like, that's pretty awesome when you're looking at it. So that's interesting, because you don't want to like completely throw that strategy out the window. It's more the pitchers didn't execute. Yeah. Is what that came down to. And we've seen a lot of that this year in relievers and starters, where it's been very, very tilting on kind of breaking down using whatever stats you like to use, so on and so forth. It just hasn't really, there's been a lot of no rhyme or reasons, it feels like, on certain things. To your point, like, coming into next year, I know it's a long ways away, but it seems like every year we have a certain strategy for closers, and it's like, well, this happened last year, blah, 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 blah. This year's so weird. It will be interesting to see how that effect takes shape on draft day. Like, does Mason Miller and Cade Smith just be insanely priced and then it gets real interesting, or how does that roll? Again, another topic for another day, but it's an interesting point you were making there. So with that RP2, and I think a lot of people, let's just be real about it, RP2 has been a struggle for a lot of people out there. How are you approaching that, like, a weekly basis? Because you mentioned, you know, Louis Varland earlier. We had the Tanner Scott weeks. Budgets are shrinking. Like, this past week, for example, it's like, do we want Hogan Harris or Elvis Alvarado? Like, there's, like, that's where we're at now. And it's the middle of June. That's probably where we're going to be for the rest of the season, barring another big injury or trade. So how were you approaching that to keep racking up saves, either move up your rate, your league standings, or your overall standings, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hardest thing to do is to just practice patience with it. And in any given week, if the closer of the week that's available, you don't actually like that guy, then I try not to force it, right? And, you know, I mean, I can certainly point to a lot of examples this year where, you know, Jacob Junis did not work out, right? I'm trying to, you know, sort of wait until the guys that I think are worth it, then, you know, I'll jump on those guys. You know, the challenge is, like, do you spend roster spots on trying to spec on certain things happening as well, right? You know, there's certain instances where I will do that. But, you know, I really want to treat those roster spots as, you know, just as valuable as the FAP as well, right? So, you know, what it means for certain teams, you know, depending on where they are in the save standings, like, it means sort of saving away some money and trying to be patient and thinking, you know, when is the closer going to pop up that I want to play as an RP2? I don't want to be shoving guys into my lineup that have like half a share of saves, or that I think could eventually get saves. You really want those, you know, it's such a huge advantage to have two of those guys that have a full-time piece of the job. So that's what I'm trying to do now. You know, how successfully I execute that is still TBD, because I got a lot of teams that are like right in the middle of the pack in saves. So, you know, but again, there's half a season to go. You know, it's practicing patience. You know, it's waiting on the guy that I think is the right guy. And when it pops up, hopefully I'm right.
Yeah, no, and that's you trust your process, as they say, when you're looking at that. I guess my one question would be is, you mentioned maybe specking on a future situation, which is probably what a lot of people are doing to try to save money these days. You kind of pick and choose and see where things go. Like, we're going to spec on the Cubs situation unless we see something crazy happen this week. There's like three options. Which one is it going to be? Some lean heavier towards others. Like, without giving away all of your, you know, process and everything, but like, what kind of statistics are you looking at for like the closer? Like, some people like K to walk, some people like swinging strikes. Obviously, you want like innings, you want the role basically, which we don't know because we're specking. So, how do you go about that when you're looking for a future closer, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, if I am trying to spec for a couple of weeks ahead of time, then it'll definitely be the same skills-based metrics that a lot of people look at, right? But if I am really trying to go near term, it is like it's all about the managers, you know, and all of the manager tendencies. That's why, I mean, it's so funny because like the, you know, there's so many aspects of this game that we play that involve trying to figure out what skills guys have and, you know, which hitter you want to pick up based on the skills that he's shown. And then with closers, it's just like, what is the manager going to do? Because I just need saves. So, you know, I try my best to keep up with basically every single box score every night, you know, and you can't always get to it. Luckily got folks like you who are sending out like daily news and notes and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's just a matter of sort of reading the tea leaves a little bit and being like, all right, what do I think this manager is going to do? Where do I think he's going to go? I think that is, you know, both a low probability of success of landing on the right guy and also the highest probability that you can get.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good approach to it. And it makes sense. Like, is it going to work all the time? No, but it's good to kind of try to get ahead of it. That's for sure. On the flip side, we're talking closers there. We've had a slew of injuries. Every year we have injuries. There's a ton early on. It kind of felt like it kind of got quiet for a bit. It's been rough and ready. I guess we don't understand what it comes down to. How do you handle injuries with your team? And I guess more so, like, how are you handling, especially as we're, you know, halfway through the season, how do you handle like stashing players or knowing when, like, how you drop players?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be pretty ruthless cutting guys, I feel like. You know, I've got on my best main right now, I've got O'Neal Cruz and Ellie, and I had Vinny. And, you know, this past weekend I had to say, you know, I gotta cut Vinny P. Like, I can't stash him and have these two other guys on my bench. I really wanna use my bench for guys that I feel like I can put into my lineup at any given time. Now, you know, I mean, there are other people who have a completely different strategy than that. There are people who will stash, you know, all seven spots on their bench and have a ton of success with it. For me, you know, I especially at this point in the season, like, we're almost halfway through. If a guy's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, then that's a pretty significant amount of time. So you better be a guy who, if we drafted today, would be a top 3 or 4 round pick, or else I'm not sure that it's worth holding on to you just to see, you know, because one of the problems is always that, what are the timelines actually going to be? You know, it is always going to be from the moment the injury happens, they give you a timeline, and then you're just stuck waiting, and it's week after week after week, and it's just agonizing to hold on to some of those guys, right? So, I mean, the hardest part is sort of accepting it and being like, you know, all right, this pick did not work out. I'll move on. I'll try to find another guy that can replace that production. And you got to go on. Cause at the end of the day, the standings are just a collection of whatever stats you got throughout the season. And you got to get those stats somehow. And a guy who's hurt and on your bench is not getting you any stats.
No, and that's a great point. And that's why I try to, like, I use the reference a lot in like DFS, where like those projection models, just like we use in season long, but there'll be projection models and people will go, well, player X projects here, but I like this player more. And I always use the example, and it works kind of to what you're saying there, is you like cover up the name, because all we want is the stat line in the end. And I, the lazy example is you want A plus B equals C. You just want to get to C. You really don't care how it gets there. Yeah. So that's why I appreciate. That's one thing. I literally was looking at a couple leagues last night where I'm like, there's zero chance I have a chance for the overall. I'm like middle of the pack right now. I just want to cash in my league. So I was starting to look at a few last night. And I'm like, you know what? My ratios are screwed. But I can gain a good amount of points and strikeouts and wins. We're just going to start. Like right now, there's two spots that are just we're going to get as many starts as we can right now. Like the last 12 weeks of the season or whatever. And it's just little things like that. I guess I know it's, I don't know if that's like exactly what you're saying, but to your point, like you just want to accumulate the stats. Like, yeah, so-and-so got me here, but we're done with you. We're moving on. I've become much more ruthless in my 12 teams because I used to hold too long. 15s, I'm still a little, I'm not as, you know, tight, but it's a little tighter. Let's put it that way. Cause that replacement, as you well know, is not great at all. So very tricky stuff. How are you handling this year? Because this is where we'll eventually head into our main portion of the show. But like, you got your multiple main event leagues, but you also have, you got, you know, some contending for the overall. How are you, like, week to week, how are you approaching going for your league, but also going for the overall? I know it sounds like a weird question, but I think you'll know where I'm going with that. Because like, you need certain points here where you can benefit more in your league versus the overall. Then how do you approach that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think for any team that is still middle of the pack or above right now, what I want to look at is compared to the overall, like how well balanced are things, and continuing to push in that regard. Because, you know, I mean, you can look at your league standings from day to day, and all the time there's folks who are higher in the overall but lower in the league standings. And the only time that actually matters is at the very end of the season. Up until the end of the season, I would rather be higher in the overall than higher in my league. And so what I will try to focus on is how do we keep all of those categories moving, on pace towards the end of the season. Now, you know, as you get to the last couple of weeks, like then you got to sort of admit defeat in a couple of spots. Right. And I got to say, I am not going to make up saves in the last, 6 weeks of the season. So here we're going 9 starters. Like we're doing that. I don't think we've reached that point yet. I mean, the one spot where, you know, like you mentioned, I can see starting to really push on it is the ratio categories, because the ratios are the one where, you know, at this point you want to start at least having some mind towards it and thinking about, all right, how do I start making progress in the other categories? Like what would the math look like for me to get into a cashing position right now? And how can I make up those categories? And I don't think you have to even do it like whole hog right from the moment you decide that that's what you're going to do. But when you're doing your fab pickups, all of a sudden you prioritize one guy over the other, because you think, all right, you know, if this is what it comes to, then I actually want that guy other than the guy that, you know, normally on any other team I would prioritize. And I think that's how you start to think about it, is you just sort of shift your mindset as the season goes along. But you know, I'm always keeping an eye, not so much on the overall standings as much as it is like for every single category, how am I comparing to where the overall is trending, and how do I keep pace in all of those?
No, and that makes a ton of sense as well. I like that you just flat out said, I'd rather finish higher in the overall than in my league, which is, I've heard from so many of the, like everyone, if you win your league, you're successful. Don't get me wrong with this, but from like the very successful, like the guilds, when I talk to the guilds, like you've talked to guilds, there's only one thing on his mind. Like he could finish 12th in every OC for all he cares if he doesn't like, and that's just the mindset. And I think there's a lot to be said about that, honestly. Real quick, did you have that mindset before you won the overall?
Yeah. I mean, okay. It is until the very last day, right? So until the very last day, I want to be higher in the overall, because if you look at it, you know, everything is going to eventually trend towards lining up with the overall standings, right? So there is some reason, you know, someone's punted a category or whatever, that they've gotten ahead of you in the league standings. I think until the very last minute, you can adjust to that and still beat that person. And so that's why I say, you know, I mean, it's partly a focus on competing in the overall, but it's also just a partly a focus of competing across all 10 categories and knowing that, you know, again, up until the very last minute, if you're competing in all 10 categories, then you can fly past anybody on the, even on the last day who has some weakness somewhere, that allows you to take that spot at the last minute.
And I guess, you know, that's just my caveman brain at times. It makes, when you say it out loud like that, it made a lot of sense that if you focus on the categories in the overall, you should be also gaining somewhere in your league. It makes a lot of sense when you say it out. Again, this is why I like to have conversations, to say things out loud. It makes,
yeah, because honestly, you know, like if you think about it, right, think about there's a guy in your league who has punted saves, right? Yep. And so he's got 1 point in saves. So, you know, at this point, even if he gets 15 across the other 9 categories, he's tapped out at 136. And so, you know, I mean, obviously, like 136 is insane. Like that's a ton of points for the league. But I think up until the last minute, you know, you can pass that guy in every other category and you can finish ahead of him and it will not look like you're going to catch him until the last possible minute because he is maxed out and your team is not maxed out. Your team can push even further. There's no possible way that he can get more than 136. You can get 150. You got 150 on the table. Now, are you going to get all 150? No, of course not. Like people hardly ever get 150 in a league. That'd it happens crazy. So rarely, but that is your ceiling and his ceiling is 136. So you keep pushing. And there is an avenue. There's always an avenue to pass that guy. So that's kind of why I think of it that way.
I like it. No, it makes a ton of sense, and it really, really does. When you're talking about, you know, picking up players on the waiver wire, I guess I got two kind of questions here. Talking fab for a little bit. How are you budgeting out your fab as things go on? Like I'll reference the guilds because he doesn't care. Like he goes balls to the wall out the gate, and he'll figure it out later. It doesn't matter if it's a 15 or a 12. Like the guys going nuts. Then I got my buddy Ben Tidd, who joins me every week. And like he's trying to stick because he spent early. He's trying to stick to like $10-ish a week right now. Like he tries to stay stricter, is my point. So there's kind of multiple approaches to this. And obviously, it could be a week to week thing. All of a sudden, this, you know, big important thing. All of this, like maybe we find out that Webb's the closer in Chicago. Like, well, that's kind of important. So that might cost more. But in a general sense, as this season's going along, how are you budgeting your fab to make sure you're doing the most you can do on that week to improve, but also leaving yourself a chance to continue to improve as the season goes along?
Yeah, I mean, I think in most of my leagues, I want to be spending like right around the average every week. And, you know, there's times where guys come in that I really like that I'll kind of spend up on. But I don't know. I'm pretty confident that the lower dollar prices that I can also find guys that are going to be really valuable. And so, you know, I will, the part of the enjoyment of playing this game is actually doing that fab every week in terms of, you know, finding those guys and, you know, putting together those bid lists. And it's also incredibly frustrating at the end of Sunday night when you're like, ah, man, all I got was like the $1 guys at the bottom of my bid list. Yeah. Right. But you know, I mean, I want to, be at least putting in bids and competitive bids for guys that I think can help my team every single week. And, you know, I mean, sometimes to my detriment in terms of like, sometimes you could probably just hold tight and not make any moves in a week and end up in the same spot that you ended up picking up the guys that you picked up. But I mean, at the end of the day, like I want to be using some roster spots to try to churn things, to try to figure out the guys that I think are going to help boost my team, you know, help them make a push. And it is not often going to be the guys who are like triple digit bids. But it's going to be a lot of those guys that are, you know, sort of right beneath that, where you're trying to figure out which of those guys can I take shots on, how many shots can I take in a season, and, you know, how do I give myself the best chance of success? But you know, I mean, fab is hard. Right. And it's gotten even harder with, you know, all of the great coverage that folks have of it. And, you know, I mean, there is very few stones that are left unturned at this point across, you know, the entire competition. And so you got to, you know, you got to find your spots and figure out what your edge is going to be in FAB.
This could just be a simple question, but I figure I'll ask it anyways. So when you're fabbing, and it kind of goes back to what you're talking about, trying to improve in certain categories each week, like not necessarily punting because of ratios or whatever, but like because batting average is a ratio as well. So like there's certain things, and as the season goes along, certain streamers is where I'm kind of going with this. When you're looking at streamers, are you cool with just fabbing a guy that might be batting average only per se, or are you making sure you're getting probably 2-3 at least categories out of each player if you're going to stream them? Like, so you're not approaching just one category, because in hindsight, it could put you back in a couple categories as you're trying to accumulate. So I guess what I'm trying to do for the listeners here is, when we're putting our waterfalls together, is it even worth putting maybe a one category contributor in your waterfall? Because in reality, that might just hurt your team more than help it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this with the caveat that other folks may take different approaches and also have a ton of success. But I mean, if I'm streaming a guy, it is almost entirely prioritizing volume and games played. And, you know, whether that is through playing time, where I feel confident that a guy is going to get every single game during, you know, Monday through Thursday or Friday through Sunday slate, or I feel good about the pitching matchups that he's got, right? All of the platoons that are going on, or, you know, the ballpark situation. But all of those, I think, would be like number one on the priority list. And it would be, you know, below that, that I would even look at specifically what categories am I chasing here, right? It is, you know, number one and number two are like, give me a bunch of plate appearances and, you know, give me more rolls of the dice and, you know, let's see what I can get out of it.
No, for sure. No, that makes a ton of sense. Figured it was probably rather simple, but just because, like, especially lately with some of these potential streamers, it's like, what are they really giving me these days? All right. Anything else on 2026 you'd want to discuss? Because then we're going to go to a little different topic here.
No, let's go ahead.
All right. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I most should know with Mr. Todd Hoppe. And yes, so far I'm 2-for-2 on that one. We got a guy that basically ran away with the main event. They got a little tight at times. That's why I really want to talk about this situation here, because a lot of what we talked about already for 2026 and what a lot of conversation is on multiple shows that I do and many others is, how do we keep improving our team to catch up in standings? That's kind of like a topic at hand, and there's a ton of great philosophy behind that. And it's like, when do you drop, so on and so forth. Not many things get discussed on how do you hold your lead? Like, a lot of us will be like, I've seen great tweets out there. People do like a midseason recap. Hey, I'm winning two leagues. I'm second in some. Awesome. How do you hold those two? That's a thing to think about. It's one thing to hold your league. To hold off an entire main event is a whole other conversation as well. So I guess the first thing is to kind of get listeners up to date that maybe don't know the whole thing is, when did you take over? Because I know it was early in the season. Like, I remember, and you mentioned it recently, it was either in the Discord or on a tweet, you know, what week it was. But when did you take over the overall lead and never look back, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, it was around week 10 of last year where I took it over, and we went back and forth a couple of times. But then it was basically first place from then on. Now, I mean, there are a couple of folks who made, you know, pretty good pushes to capturing that spot. Scott Slezak was there. Greg Martin was right there, right on my heels. So it was never at a point where I personally felt like I had it locked up. But there were quite a few weeks in a row where it was the number one next to my name.
Yes, so that's quite the humility right there, folks. Because yes, it was, and Ben and I would recap like the overall, because he was always seemed to be hanging around in the top 10 for a while and stuff. So we look at things, and he had guilds who had like three teams in the top 10, but we look at it, and there was like towards the downstretch there, Martin got real close to jump it in there, and then Slezak took second on the last day, like last half hour of the day. But they made pushes to your points. So yeah, it's never over, and that's very kind of you to put it that way. But you had the one next to your name for a long time. That was really nice. So I guess where I would go with this is, what was, I guess, going in each week in Fab. We'll start with Fab. How did you approach Fab with the lead? And I say this because, you know, you could just be like, oh, I just did it like any other week, and maybe that's what you did. At the same time, you some people, like, I guess generically, would you be cautious? Were you being aggressive still, like foot on the gas? Like, how did you go about approaching, I guess, Fab to improve your team?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things that happens when you get that far up in the overall standings is that you do start to reach a point where you're like 99th percentile in a couple of categories. And so I do think you have to be specific and intentional about the Fab moves that you make to try to improve those other areas, right? So, I mean, it does, the approach changes. It has to change because at some point, like, the marginal value of a guy who's going to move you up in a category where you're already towards the top is, it's just zero. So, I mean, that was, you know, that was certainly a big part of it in the second half of last season was getting, I mean, my ratios, ERA and WHIP, got to the point where it was like, you know, I could sit down and do the math and say, well, you know, even if a guy gives me a 27 ERA for the week, if he wins one game and he gets me five strikeouts, then I move up in the standings. And so, you know, you would never have that thought process with any team that's, you know, in a normal spot in the standings. But as you get to the top, some of those sort of weird oddities happen where you really do focus on, all right, you know, what can this guy get me in the one category where I can move? You know, the other thing was just looking at the other teams around me in the overall standings and seeing who they've got. You know, it was pretty quick check to see, like, who did Greg pick up in Fab last week, right? And I have no issue being ruthless and picking up the same guy that he's got on his team. And, you know, at the very least, if that guy goes off, then, you know, I've got him on my team too. And so there's, you know, there's ways where I think you're just trying to minimize the leverage that somebody else can have over you, where, you know, they've got that guy and then suddenly they can surge past you. Those are the two things that are very different in how I approached Fab on that team versus like any normal team, because there's no way I would do that for any of my other teams other than the one that was in that spot in that moment.
Cause like right now, for instance, you're not looking at the teams ahead of you in the main event overall and seeing what they're doing. Are you, you're more, how do I keep move? Like you're obviously looking at where can you improve standings, but I mean, like you mentioned, you're looking at players X, Y, and Z picked up, Greg and others. You're not really doing that with being from behind is my point. I'm trying to like separate the two things here.
Yeah. If you're trying to catch, you know, trying to catch folks right now. Right. So I'm paying a little less attention to what they've got on their team. And for mine, it's about, you know, the first step is all 10 categories. Like how do you push all 10 categories forward to make that move to be in a spot then where it matters who they've got versus who you've got. I don't think we're to that point yet. Although I mean, the guy who's in the number one spot right now, like I think he can start thinking about that stuff because he's got a pretty significant lead. You know, you can already see sort of unique approaches that he's taking with his roster. He starts Otani at pitcher almost every week now. He dropped Willy Adames this week. Like they, you know, they're starting to see the gears churn and you know how he's thinking about it. Yeah, are those good decisions? I don't know. I'm certain that he's thinking about it and, you know, taking that same approach. And that is something that is unique to being in, you know, that top spot where everyone else is chasing you.
Yeah. As of right now, you're 13th. So yeah, you have a handful ahead of you, but it is a very unique situation. Like you said, to look at things differently, just out of curiosity, how many players were you keeping an eye on? Was it Jess, Greg, Scott, and maybe another, or were you like top 10? Like, I guess how much were you paying attention to the group behind you?
Yeah. I mean, it was like the top five teams, which, you know, kind of moved back and forth. You know, the Gilts had a team that was up in that spot for a while too. So it was mostly those, you know, if you look, even if you look at the overall standings today, right. The difference between the guy who's in first place right now and where my team is at is the same as the difference between where my team is at and team 100 in number of points, right? So from first to 13th is the same gap as 13th to 100. So right now he doesn't have to worry about me. You know, like there's enough season left where I can make a surge and make a push and catch up to him. But I mean, part of it is honestly that I need him to kind of fall backwards a little bit as well to help make up that ground, because the very peak at the top, you know, that is a narrow peak. And I think there's, you know, very few teams, which is why, you know, which is why the Guilds is right in some sense about, you know, if you want to compete for an overall, where do you have to be right now? You got to be somewhere close to the top, because it is going to be, you know, it gets to be a steeper climb the closer you get to the top, and it is hard to move up in those spots.
Yes. Yeah. Things start getting a lot, I guess, not tighter is the right word, but to jump over those, to make up the points, I guess the best way I could put it, it's a lot trickier to go there. Are you a spreadsheet guy, a projection guy, a combination of the two? Like when you notice you're ahead of these guys, you mentioned you're like 99th percentile. So, you know, where you can maybe do things a little differently to protect yourself because, you know, this person can only make up this amount and all those, you know, statistical backgrounds to it all. How are you analyzing that on a week to week basis?
I make spreadsheets all the time, but there's not always a lot of rhyme or reason to it either. It's just like thoughts that are going through my head, and I'm like, all right, you know, what would happen here, right? I think the best one from last year was when I put a spreadsheet together where I could figure out if I had the Austin Gomber two-step for every one of my remaining pitching slots. So like with 3 weeks left in the season or whatever, if I had 27 Austin Gomber two steps, then what would it do to my spot in the standings? And yeah, I mean, it was the dumbest idea ever. And also really enlightening, because I was like, oh man, I would move down like two spots in ERA if I had that. It was just mind blowing. So that was something that gave me confidence to be like, all right, you know, I'll grab all of these guys. Like, Kaiwei Tang, sure, like, come on down. You know, Eric Fetty, I'd love to have you on the squad. That type of stuff. And so, you know, it changes week to week, and just in terms of like what's going through my head and, you know, what I'm thinking about and how my teams are looking at what spreadsheets I make. I would say, you know, the answer to your question is that it is not, there's nothing really systematic about how I do it. I sort of put things together as I'm thinking about them. And then, you know, the only thing that's systematic is the lineup setting in terms of, you know, picking out the guys that, that I, you know, put some pen to paper to figure out which guys I want in my lineup. Right. And that is, some of that is spreadsheets. Some of it is, you know, I think has to be more than that. Right. Which is, you know, I think really appreciate the approach that you take on a lot of these guys sometimes, in terms of like, you know, there's nothing wrong with riding the hot hand on a guy and, you know, keeping Ildemaro Vargas in your lineup. Like, you know, the underlying stats may say this guy stinks. But, you know, he's riding a hot streak now. And, you know, whether or not you believe it's sustainable, I think there's a lot of merit to having those guys around. And, you know, I think it goes beyond just the thought of like, you know, the underlying stats don't support what this guy is doing, right? I don't think the underlying stats always have to support what a guy's doing, partly because the manager is going to keep him in the lineup if he's doing what he's doing, right? So again, it goes back to the volume thing, like, just give me more shots at it. I think there's also a lot of stuff that I don't think we admit sometimes that there's stuff that probably the underlying stats we can't capture, right? And it's okay to say, I don't understand how this guy's doing it, but he's been awesome. So I'm keeping him in my lineup until he's not awesome anymore. So, you know, how do you make a spreadsheet for that? I don't know the answer to that, but I'll take whatever approach works for me and go from there.
I love that. Just by talking to you in Vegas, and then now, like, it's like we all love Phil Dussault. He's just a robot, like what he does. And then, like, I literally have a group chat with Ben and Ryan, and Ben is a statistical wizard, like, and then you have Ryan, who is as well. And so, like, it's just fun kind of bouncing things off. But yeah, like, my little brain, it's I played ball for so long, and baseball to me is such a streaky sport where it's like, that's why I do ride the hot hands. You just got to know when to jump off. That's part to it. But Mark Winoker, also made a great point that I heard him. It was either on a podcast or in person. I can't remember now. But he says he loves the under the hood stuff for preseason because you have the big sample and all this. In season, things are changing so much. And then you said a key part. How do we know if we can even really quantify what's happening in that short duration of time? Because like a lot of statistical people have tried to figure out when a stat becomes sticky. Some stats are, you know, quick, some aren't. How do we know that's like consistent from player to player? Like so many questions can be added to your point. I'm just kind of echoing why that is a philosophy. And trust me, I am not a superstar in this at all, but it works for me. But it also to your point is you can do it a bunch of different ways and make it all work together. And it's cool to hear that you kind of use a little bit of everything to piece it, which is what you should be doing. I think honestly, if you get pigeonholed into one corner, you're going to eventually get, you know, exposed is the way I look at things. So yeah, that's very, very interesting to hear you talk about it in that format. I guess a question I have for you, when you have a big season like that and you've been in the lead since week 10, like some people might think, hey, he's had it easy. Like he got lucky. There's no issues, this, that, and the other. Cause that's like the whole concept is skills are super important for this, but you got to have some injury luck on your side as well. That's just reality. We talked about injuries earlier. Did you have any big injuries that you had to like basically put the Band-Aid on and fix that allowed you to keep going? Like you were like, the injury happened. You're like, oh no, this is going to do it. We're in trouble. Or was it just like you just hit the right like notes the whole way through?
Yeah, I mean, Zach Wheeler was a big part of the team. Yeah, and, you know, he went down with the thoracic outlet thing. You know, luckily that was far enough into the season where I banked pretty good stats from him. It was similar with Eovaldi. Like, Eovaldi was another big piece of that team that then went down with an injury and was done. But, you know, I mean, part of it was, you could say part of it was luck, definitely. Part of it was, you know, timing things right. But then, you know, picking up Cade Horton at the time when I did, picking up Trevor Rogers at the time when I did, I immediately had guys who could go right in and give me, you know, basically Wheeler, Eovaldi type stats for the second half of the season. So, you know, I mean, that is part of it. I think just in terms of, you know, I think the one takeaway for me from that was have, you know, don't take your foot off the gas in terms of putting together, you know, let's say the starting pitching. Right. I had really good starting pitching for the first half of the year. The second half, it could have all fallen apart if I hadn't continued to add and keep some of those guys on my bench and have them ready to cycle in. You know, that was the big piece of it where I had to kind of react and respond to stuff that was happening on my team.
You mentioned the Gomber scenario, and I want to kind of go back to that because first off, I'd love to hear like all of these ideas you have going through your head because, as you've noticed listening to me and Ryan, I'll throw a bunch of dumb stuff at the wall. That's just kind of where my head is. And like sometimes he'll put together a bloom board before these reasons. It's very interesting to me. And you never know what you can gain from that. Like to your point is like, you do these just to see, and like who knew what the Gomber thing was, but the fact that if you would have taken the chance, you'd only lost 2 points. So it shows you that, hey, go take a chance on these streams. Like you might, more often than not, it might benefit you than it's going to hurt you is kind of where I get out of what you said. Again, that could be wrong. But by knowing that, how is that approach taking? Like this year, we've had a ton of streamers, a ton. Not all have gone great, very obviously. But like even those mid-pack guys, I guess, when you're talking like the Flaherty's, the Gallons, the Chain Boz, all those kind of guys that fit the mold of up and down roller coasters. Does that give you a sense of, hey, I should stick with these guys? Or does it mean I should be willing to at least move and shake and stream guys more? Like how does that Gomber situation work for you? Because we're talking a lot about when should I drop these pitchers, where it sounds like you might think maybe it's not the worst thing to keep pitching these pitchers.
Yeah. I mean, in 15 team leagues, I'm trying my hardest to not drop healthy pitchers, healthy starters, right? So if I've got a healthy starter, even if everything under the hood, over the hood, on top of the hood, if the whole hood looks terrible, I'm still trying as hard as I can to hold on to those guys. Okay. Because, I mean, there's a couple of reasons. One is that I think things change. Things change for pitchers. Things change for the matchups that they've got. You know, I mean, there was so much gnashing of teeth about Sonny Gray early in the season and where are the strikeouts and he's walking too many guys and this isn't sustainable. And then Sonny Gray changed and the strikeouts came back. Right. And you know, that was, I think just one example I can think of guys that, you know, it was worth trying to hold on to a guy like that there. You know, I think back to, I dropped Nick Martinez before the very first week of the season because he looked absolutely awful in spring. And, you know, now I could look at it and say, well, he's gotten really lucky. You know, this isn't sustainable, but at this point, who cares? Like, I should have held on to Nick Martinez and I could have gotten all of the goodness here. And so, you know, I, again, if this is really specific to 15 team leagues, because I think your approach has to be completely different in a 12 team league, but in a 15 team league where the guys who you can pick up on the waiver wire, I mean, there are weeks where I don't think there's a good streaming option on the waiver wire. Like, there's not a great option for a guy you can pick up and put in your lineup. And so the answer is probably whoever the best middle reliever is. And I don't want to end up in that spot because, you know, more often than not, I have found in my experience, when I pull a guy off the waiver wire directly into my lineup, I need to be really confident that I know what he is and what his matchups are, that it can go really sour really quickly on a lot of those guys, which is, you know, I mean, again, the Austin Gomber thing, like, all over again. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing, the biggest, you know, adjustment that I've tried to make this year and last year is, you know, being more intentional about looking at the pitching matchups that I've got and not just thinking, you know, not just eyeballing it, not just saying, oh, he's got the Pirates this week. Like, that's a must start. That's a smash start. Then you start to look at it and it's like, man, the Pirates offense is good. Like, like, what am I doing? Like, I shouldn't have started that guy against the Pirates. And so I think there is things that you can do in that regard where, you know, a lot of stuff that maybe looks like a good matchup, or that, you know, you offhand think that's going to be a great spot. Maybe it's not. At least spending the time every week when I'm setting my lineups to look at that kind of stuff, I think has helped a lot in terms of just avoiding the absolute landmines, which when it comes to starting pitching, like, that I think has to be the top priority, is don't land on, you know, one of those 15 earned runs in a week, right? Because it's going to happen sometimes to you. You know, I mean, Shota's going to do it to you one week, right? But you don't want to intentionally start stepping on landmines, you know, just because you got to try to get the two-step guy in your lineup.
That's some wisdom right there. Might be my biggest takeaway from this whole show right now, because I got some struggle buses in the 15s, and I just keep churning things. And looking back, maybe I, you know, should sit on my hands a little more, but I guess time will still tell on that one, and we'll see. When you have a lead, we'll kind of circle back here. I asked you for your 2026 how you're handling Fab to catch up. Now, how are you handling Fab to hold a lead? Because, again, you mentioned, you know, you're already in the higher percentile. You're not just, you know, grabbing guys to grab guys because it's not going to help you. But at the same time, you still got to be active. And more importantly, maybe you're stopping someone else from improving. So, and you mentioned you might be watching, like, what other players in your league do. Like, were you still, I guess, what was your aggressive level when you were doing this? Or was it more like floor plays here?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I prioritized keeping some amount of money around to avoid zeros and to avoid being in really bad spots in terms of who I had to start, right? Because there's only one way to go, and it was down. And, you know, the quickest way to go down is to be taking zeros or to be just get your ratios absolutely nuked. So, I mean, that was probably the biggest part of it. You know, the rest of it was mostly, I mean, it changed a little bit week to week, just depending on where the standings are, right? Because, you know, one week, you know, as I started to fall further behind in saves, then it was like, all right, I'm going to grab a couple of these relievers and use my bench spots for that. And if I need to play four relievers in a week to make up ground, then, you know, at least I give myself that option. I can, you know, look at the numbers. I can put it together. I can see what's it worth if this guy gives me one save and doesn't do much else. And there's going to be spots eventually where that's worth it. Maybe it's, you know, totally worth it to justifiable to put that guy in that spot. So that was the biggest thing, is at least giving myself, you know, options, you know, keeping things so that I could avoid kind of the worst case scenario. And then, so maybe that means like sitting out when whatever the top pickup of the week is, just in terms of whatever upside I was going for. So maybe it is playing a little bit more to get the floor. But still, I think still being aggressive, because you know, I mean, the people behind you aren't giving up either. So, you know, you got to keep your foot on the gas.
Another question for you: when you're setting your lineups, this could be very similar to what your Fab conversation was right there. You just want to keep accumulating your at bats, I'm assuming, and so on and so forth. But I guess what were you looking at when you're setting your lineups besides a healthy body that plays enough?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd be lying if I said that I didn't spend a little bit more time on that team specifically, looking at the exact matchups and trying to figure out what I thought made the most sense. You know, I mean, I think at this point, it is probably everybody has access, or almost everybody has access to tools like the Razzball weekly thing. And so then it involves going a layer deeper than that and trying to figure out, all right, I'm going to start this guy, even though Raz thinks it's a bad play. I've got, you know, it was finding, you know, finding some of those smaller edges on that type of stuff to make the right decisions, more so than it was, you know, just kind of going with the guys that I had. But, you know, I don't know. And also, when you have a really good team, the decisions in terms of setting lineups get, you know, they also get a lot easier, just in terms of like, man, all these guys are good. Like, I love this team. All 30 of these guys are incredible. So there's no such thing as a wrong decision, which is a good feeling to have as well, because, and a rare feeling, right? Because I've got so many teams right now that I look at that I'm like, man, I don't like any of these guys in the util spot. But you know, that's how it goes, right? Every team is a little bit different.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's some teams you just wonder, how am I still here at this point in time? But it's still pieced together. Anything else you'd like to give as maybe some advice to people trying to hang on to their leads, be it for a league or for an overall, compared to kind of pushing to gain ground this season?
Yeah, maybe building on that last point, actually, because I was thinking about it, you know, the guilds. Last year, I remember at one point him looking at my team and being like, I remember what he said. It was like, you know, he's got Mike Yastrzemski in his lineup, right? Like, how is this guy leading the overall? And, you know, I think a big piece of it is this sort of twofold, right? One is, you know, like I mentioned earlier, where at some point we got to forget about whatever the name is on the back of the jersey and the guy in your lineup. And you're like, you just got to get stats. And so, you know, it goes to that same idea of like, if I think a guy is a good stream for this week, he's got the right matchups, then like, I have no problem shoving that guy in my lineup and people being like, what are you doing? How are you playing this guy? You know, if I'm confident I can get the stats from that guy, then I go ahead. It's the same thing with dropping guys. Like, you know, I mean, you make a bad drop, then so what? Like, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, Waxman makes fun of you. We've all been made fun of by Waxman.
Yeah, and he says very, yeah, he does it often.
Join the club. But, you know, I mean, that is, I think those are the two areas where I think I've sort of changed my viewpoint from when I first started playing to now, is like, all I care about is racking up the stats, right? And you know, whoever it comes from, whoever's on my team, then you know, I'll be aggressive. I'll risk making mistakes, because you know, when it hits, it can be worth it.
All right, then I'm gonna ask you a question on top of that now. So yes, and that's been a topic of conversation for years now, and I've had guests on, and the guests on other shows is you just want to accumulate, especially in 15s. It makes so much sense. 12s almost more so if you really want to get to the brass tacks of it. But I guess what I would ask you then, because so to incorporate it with Fab, when you're picking up guys like, say, a Yastrzemski or a Benintendi, kind of falls in that world, stuff like that, then you want to drop someone. We look at schedules a lot. Like Ryan's got the weekly planner he put together. And so we'll see, like, every now and then you get a 3-3 week, so you're probably not starting that guy. You'll have a 2-4 week, though, or, like, obviously 5-1, 6-0, you're all about that life. Is a 4-2 versus a guy for a potentially slightly better player versus, I'm saying 4 rights, 2 less for those that don't know, compared to a 5-1 of a guy might be slightly worse. Does that 5-1 skew things for you in Fab for a 4-2, if that makes sense?
I mean, there's definitely some nuance to it, but again, for me,
like, how many starts do you need a week to make yourself feel good? I guess, is it four, at least four?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like, it comes down to volume, right? Like, yeah. If I think a guy's going to get the volume, then it could be a significantly worse player. Right. I mean, I haven't checked, how did Jose Siri do today? Like, I put Jose Siri into some lineups because he had 2 lefties in this first period and doesn't look like it's gone super well. But I mean, those are like shots yeah, that you take, shots, right? Yeah. And you know, you're not going to get all of them right.
No.
The thing is, like, you know, you've got 23 lineup spots to set every week for, what is it, 27 weeks?
Yep.
So those are all opportunities to try to gain stats. And, you know, I don't know that there's never a 100% right answer, right? You're always dealing with, like, this is a 55-45 decision. Like, it could go either way, but I kind of lean this way. Then, you know, the hope is that over the course of the season, as the whole season plays out, then you get enough of those 55-45 decisions right where you've sort of pushed yourself forward slowly. But I mean, that ball doesn't roll quickly up the hill. Like, you gotta push it week by week, and you know, a lot of times it is pretty marginal decisions between that guy who's 4-2 versus the guy who's 5-1. Yep. And I don't know that there, like I said, I don't know that there's 100% right answer. If you had the right answer, then, you know, your Patreon would be making even more money, I think. But you know, that's the game
I
we wish play.
I had those answers. I'd be winning the main event overall. But I guess, and then I just a little piggyback off of that, because I was going to say that you mentioned it was Siri, because it's something I try to promote on, like, the Fab show. Is, I can't remember what team it was this week, was no lefties and 3 righties to start the week, but there was 3 lefties and no righties to end the week. So I mentioned, you know, the biweekly rosters. You mentioned with Siri, you got 2 lefties. You started them for the first half of the week. How often do you, maybe it's only if you have an extra spot to move around on your bench, I get, like, how often do you utilize Fab to just play a half a week, I guess? Because I don't think enough players, like, a lot of players do, but I don't think enough players actually focus on that as much as they maybe could.
Yeah, I'll do it pretty often, but you know, obviously the problem becomes you can't do it for every spot.
Yeah, only so many roster spots. Yeah,
so you got to kind of pick where it makes sense. You know, I think there was a listener question coming up about which position you can stream the best, and it's definitely in the 15 teamers. It's the outfield spots where all the platoons exist, and so I think I have no problem having, you know, 7 outfielders on my team, 8 outfielders on my team, if I can swap those guys in half week to half week. But, you know, I mean, again, like, it, you reach a point where there's a roster crunch and you can only have so many of those guys. So you ideally, you know, I mean, ideally you don't have to swap anybody at the half week, but realistically that's not how it works. So you have to play that game. And, you know, I mean, there's no shame in having Dom Canzone on your team and swapping him in for the half weeks. And then, you know, the half weeks where you just can't use him, but that's still a valuable player to have.
100%. So, yeah, now I wanted to get that last one through here, but you just segued that quite well. Let's get to some of these listener questions. We have a couple in the Discord here. Mike Carter, good friend of the show, he says, Todd, Bubba, forget strategy talk. Just tell me why I should not quit playing. He's joking because last night he's had every injury this week. And he's just like, I don't even know why I'm playing anymore. But any words of wisdom for the good doctor to hang around?
I mean, the one thing I would say is it can get, you know, it can be pretty easy playing this game to sometimes feel like, man, like, my team has had just the absolute worst luck. And it is, it's almost intentionally built that way, where, like, there are there are few moments where it's just like pure ecstasy. Like, yes, I like that. I nailed that guy. And surrounded by just constant disappointment of injuries or your pitchers being absolutely terrible. Just one thing after another, right? And especially in a 15 team league where honestly, like so many of the guys we have rostered on our teams, they're actually not good. Yeah, surprise. So, you know, I think, you know, oftentimes for me, it helps to just like look at some of the other teams in my league even, and just say like, oh man, like that guy, look at how awful his luck has been in terms of injuries, and losing that closer and gaining some perspective in that way. Because, I mean, the honest thing is that like, it is very easy to have any of your teams, you know, from night to night where you feel like, man, I am terrible at this. And the same thing happens to me, right? I mean, like I had a great season last year. And even then I was looking at teams day by day being like, man, what was I thinking? Like this team is absolutely terrible. I am not any good at this. So, you know, I mean, that is the nature of the game. And sort of, I feel like how it was built. But I think also at the core of it, why a lot of us actually enjoy it, because when you do nail something, man, it's sweet. It's like awesome. It feels good.
When you have that one guy you picked up in Fab and he goes like double dong the first night, you're like, oh yeah. Or so, or like, you know, that one player that is continually produced, like just, yeah, the goods are great. It's just human nature to weigh on the bads more so. If that's just the way we're built, but that's also what keeps us grinding, I think, at the same time. So yeah, a lot to be said about that. Mailman Mike says, first question, at what point of the season do you generally start fabbing category specific? Is that a strategy you believe in?
Yeah, I mean, I think for most teams, the majority of teams, I don't want to be category specific until like the last month, but you know, it's on a spectrum, right? Because it's not like one day you just flip the switch and you're like, oh man, now I have to fab only steals guys. I think it has to be sort of a mindset shift as the season goes along, right? You get a feel for where your team is at, and week after week after week, you can sort of see like, oh, this team is slowly falling behind in steals, or it's not making up the ground I want it to. Then you just sort of shift the scales in your fab pickups to, all right, maybe I'll get, you know, I'm behind in steals. Like I'll prioritize Cold Brew Carrig over Montgomery. And, you know, I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I wouldn't say that's not necessarily being hyper-focused on specific categories as much as it is mindful of like, for my team at this point in the season and where I got to make up ground, like this makes more sense to make this fab move. And you just sort of shuffle a couple of dollars one way versus the other. And then as you get to the end of the season, then it becomes like full on bull rush. Like just give me that category and see what moves I can make. But that's like the last month of the season, right?
Yeah, no, I like that you said, because that's a question we get a lot is, when should I focus on this and that? And that's kind of why, like, what part of what I was asking earlier, it's like, when you're streaming a player off the wire, like, are you concerned about just, like, you know, the batting average only guy, the speed only guy, because he's going to hurt you elsewhere, and you focus much more on the speed guy late, potentially, type thing. So that makes a ton of sense. Second question from Mailman Mike, you hit on it. He says, what positions are you comfortable streaming the most from? I believe Bubba has mentioned outfielder a number of times, and you kind of agreed with that a second ago. Adam Brunchen says, where is the acceptable line to take the zero at catcher two instead of the average drain? For example, in 15-teamers, guys like Gasper, Higashioka, Crooks, etc., they're hitting 165 to 210, single-digit runs in RBI, zero stolen bases, at most one homer over the last 15 days. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one you could make a spreadsheet for maybe and try to figure out. Okay. I don't, you know, it's a hard question to answer. A lot of times in my leagues, what I'll do is I will take a look at the catchers available on the wire. And sometimes there's a guy there who clears that bar, right? Like in a couple of leagues, it's been Tyler Stevenson got dropped and I feel fine picking up Tyler Stevenson to fill for Drake Baldwin being out, right? One league I had a week where I took the zero and just left Baldwin in my lineup. The next week I saw Indy Rodriguez on the wire and thought, you know what, this is better than a zero. So, you know, it's a fine line definitely between those two, but, you know, I think it is the one spot where, you know, because the replacement level is so bad, especially in 15 team leagues, that it's acceptable some weeks, you know, especially if your bench can't handle it, then you just leave that guy in your lineup and you take a zero. It's not the preferred option, but it might be the best option given where your team's at any given point in time.
No, that's one thing I've learned over the last couple of years, especially in 15s, 12s. You should be able to find a replacement, but maybe not, because it's been a weird year in that regard. So 15s, I've been much more inclined to the zero at certain weeks because it's just been brutal at times. But yeah, Indy, good pickup with Indy. That's looking real strong. SMMS79 as our last question here. Do you hold on to multiple corner infield guys if they are playing well, even if one of them might be like two moves away from starting? Put simply, are you okay dropping a productive player that is less useful to you because you have depth, knowing it might benefit someone else in your league?
You're not supposed to pronounce the 79, right?
That's right. It's supposed to be silent. I forgot. God, you stalk around in that Discord, don't you? You don't comment, Bob. You pay attention in there.
Yeah, I'm part of this group.
I'm part of this group. No, we love having you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's another question where there's a lot of nuance to it, right? I mean, for my team, if a guy is not fitting the roster specifically, but is still producing, then I think I would be, in most cases, pretty hesitant to drop. But also, as the season gets later and later, then you got to just sort of bite the bullet on some of those. And if it's not, you're not going to be able to fit him into your lineup, then, you know, then it becomes a drop. You also got to look at the other teams in your league at the same time. You're always at risk of, you know, if you make a bad drop like that, the guy right behind you pouncing on it and, you know, him taking advantage of it as well. So, I mean, I try to build my rosters in such a way where I don't put myself in that spot very often. But it happens sometimes. I feel like it happens more often in the 12 team leagues, you know, where all of a sudden you sort of hit on, let's say you hit on a Weatherholt. And then you're like, well, but like, I also got all of these other middle infield guys that I like, plus my top draft picks. And so, you know, at that point, you sort of do got to bite the bullet. You want to put the best team that you can put for your roster out there. And so, but I think it does have to be a pretty extreme situation, I think, where you do something like that.
Yeah, it's a good question because it makes us think, like, do you just hold them so you don't help other teams? And kind of at times, if you can. There's a lot to be said about that part of the strategy as well. So we will wrap it up there. A lot of really good conversation there, from being the top of 2025 and working your way to get back up there maybe in 2026. Any parting words as we are about, 13 weeks left or so, 13 and a half weeks left in the season?
No, man, thanks for having me. Keep up the good work. You're the hardest working man in the industry, so appreciate you. You know, let's finish out this season strong.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. It was a pleasure meeting you in Vegas, and long time coming to have you on this show. It's on me scheduling wise, but it was great to have you. And we'll have to chat again sometime, and let's cross our fingers we'll get to see each other again this off season.
Sounds good. Go USA.
There you go. Yes, big game. You have fun with that, okay? You have fun. Everybody, make sure you follow Todd on Twitter at TulsaHop. And this was Benched with Bubba, episode 862. Catch y'all next time.